You know what I love about flying? It's the ability to have a great conversation with someone. I always find when I'm on an airplane, I get a great conversation going with somebody. It's exciting. I don't know what it is. People seem to loosen up on an airplane. You know, it's two people talking, really getting to know each other for a short period of time. It really makes the flight go faster, I find.
Like being trapped on an airplane with Del Griffith, you're listening to The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
They've got no smoking signs. They ought to have no talking signs. There'd have been plenty of times when I want to switch that sucker on, believe you me.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
Welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have everybody with us tonight. Lots going on this show as we're busy. I am Teebs with me as always. Jason, how are you?
Good. It's been a busy couple weeks, and I'm hoping that after tomorrow it will just like be smooth sailing for a little while.
Yeah, I can echo that sentiment. It's been nothing but a nightmare this week for me, so... good news, though, is that we made it here. We are in studio. Mm-hmm. We are ready to go. Have a lot to talk about.
Despite all the traffic and craziness, I had to get to... So, it's roughly a 10-minute drive from my place to Assiniboine Park, because we had to go over there for my brother's wedding rehearsal yesterday.
Yeah.
A 10-minute drive took half an hour.
You know what? I won't lie. It's about a 15... No, maybe a little bit more than that. Maybe about a 20-minute drive from like my house to the university where we broadcast from here. And that Osborne Village parking lot that's because of the construction on the bridge is just a nightmare, and it took me legitimately like 30 minutes to get through.
Then now there's that new like weird switchover on like Osborne proper, and it's just like awful.
So I was like, yeah, I'm done with this traffic stuff too already, and I'm glad I don't have to drive it every day and kill somebody. But song you're hearing as we a little bit of fun on this song, because we did some digging on this. Again, pretty recognizable song. Song is a classic song, Taking Care of Business, written by Randy Bachman, the first recorded by the Canadian rock group Bachman Turner Overdrive for their 1973 album, Bachman Turner Overdrive 2. Lead vocals, as we know, sung by Randy Bachman, but Randy actually had started working on the song, the chords and the idea for the song, while still a member of the Guess Who.
Nice.
Which people will go, oh, that's kind of interesting. Song's original title, though, was White Collar Worker.
Okay.
And the song was supposed to be about a recording technician who worked on the Guess Who's recording. Basically, the guy would get up in the morning, alarm clock warning, take the 8:15 to the city. That's exactly what this guy did, apparently, in terms of him going into the studio and working on all this stuff.
Nice.
Bachman played the chorus riff, though, in terms of getting the buy-in from it. Played the chorus riff in front of the Guess Who. Burton Cummings allegedly told Bachman that he was ashamed of him. And the Guess Who would never record the song because they would be sued by the Beatles, with the chorus sounding like another song. You might recognize this song as the Beatles' Paperback Writer. We do have a clip of that song here. Here comes that song. So this is what the chorus originally sounded like. White collar worker. So anyway, so Burton Cummings was completely against it. He was worried about being sued by the Beatles, which I can understand.
I could see the similarities. It's a little bit of an aggressive way to put it, though.
Well, again, I mean... I'm ashamed of you.
We could get sued.
Right. It was still sort of a work in progress. I think Burton might have been a little harsh about that, but no big deal. But again, kept it in his back pocket. So
it worked out. He has a theater named after him now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, who knows? what's next for that guy. But according to Music Legend, though, BTO was still playing small clubs as was promoting its first album. They were all over Canada trying to get a little bit of traction in terms of finding finding some listeners. And Bachman was on his way to Vancouver when he heard radio DJ Daryl B's catchphrase, "We're taking care of business."
Nice.
Kind of kicked it around in his head a little bit and got to the gig that night. Lead vocalist Fred Turner from Bachman Turner Overdrive, his voice gave out that night before the band's last set. Legitimately awesome. Went hoarse, could not sing at all. So Randy Bachman took over the singing duties. He had the band play the song White Collar Worker with the words changed to Taking Care of Business. And the place went nuts. Fans yes. loved it. So he went back, quick rework of the lyrics and the chords, really sort of redid the chorus a little bit so he didn't get sued by the Beatles. Obviously, that's pretty important. And that's how the song Taking Care of Business was born. It spent 20 weeks on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. And for those that are legitimately a little bit of fun with music, it's actually been converted into a Christmas carol. You will give him lots of time to put some special toys under your tree. And he'll be taking care of Christmas. I am not a fan of that.
I remember, you know, back in the day when I was working at a grocery store, basically November 1st, like the Christmas music came on.
Right, yeah.
And every time that song came on, I was like, why? When did the Christmas music? Oh, it didn't stop. It's there we go.
I do not like that version, but hey, whatever. Money is money, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the whole point of today's show. We're talking about business, and I mean that's a business decision to make a little extra money off that song. So let's dive into this because there was some fun business this week in the NHL
fun?
As we saw. I think it's fun because I love the chaos that offer sheets bring. I love
we're starting with that.
Yeah, the mass insanity. We'll get to the other one in a second. The mass insanity that comes along with it because everybody goes bananas when they when an offer sheet is made. But the St. Louis Blues kind of doubled down on theirs, literally, and offer sheeted two Edmonton Oilers this week on Monday. As they legitimately extended offers to defenseman Philip Broberg and winger Dylan Holloway.
Yep.
Now, as you probably have heard, Stan Bowman took over. He's got a lot to do on his plate in terms of taking care of contracts, including a massive contract for Leon Draisaitl.
Yep.
And they have very little cap space to play with.
Exactly. Negative cap space, actually.
Correct. Yes. They're actually $7 million over the cap right now. That's coming up. And again, cap will go up next year. We'll see some more stuff. But what St. Louis did is signed both of these players to two-year deals, basically handcuffing the Oilers in terms of their ideas for what could be done if they wanted to retain these players. For those that didn't hear, and again, I'll give you the numbers right now, $4.5 million a season for Broberg, $2.3 million for Holloway, both on two-year deals. So if the cap goes up by $5 million next year, that's already spent.
That essentially doubles the overage of the Oilers right now.
Correct, yeah.
That's hilarious.
Now, I love that because, again, I think that teams that don't know how to manage their cap should be punished hard like this by other teams.
Exactly.
But teams that go, you know what, we got some cap space, we can have some fun with this.
Yep.
I look at it, though, and I go, Edmonton may have to take their team up. They may have to start dismantling their team right now.
Yep.
And again,
yes, the career of Stan Bowman, dismantling teams that are really good.
But I question this because, again, why on earth would you sign a Jeff Skinner knowing that you have a Dylan Holloway who's coming up and one of your better prospects? You've basically told Holloway he's not worth anything to you at that point. So why wouldn't Holloway take that deal? Broberg basically, he played 12 games for the Oilers last season.
Yep.
12 games in a lineup that featured Brett Kulak and Vincent Desharnais.
Yep.
That couldn't move the puck worth a damn with Cody Ceci on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the guy that's legitimately going, how come you're not playing me?
Yeah.
I'll take $4.5 million from St. Louis and go play there.
It's because it's this mentality of like wanting a very specific type of player. Like the conversation about Vincent Desharnais being seaweed man with like how difficult he is to get past in the neutral zone and in the defensive zone. It's a crock of what.
I know.
Because it's just he's not that. And Cody Ceci, despite what every NHL GM who's ever had him is trying to make you believe, he's not a good hockey player.
No.
Or he's not at least a good NHL hockey player. Like, it's this mentality, for some reason, that so many GMs have of needing to stuff so many, like, kind of okay guys that, like, are have veteran experience and get the job done into their lineup that just gets you so much bloat, because all of these guys are making roughly the same amount of money, yeah. And it's way more than what you can get for a younger player or a prospect that's, you know, making that jump with their entry-level contract. Like, the teams that are successful repeatedly in the NHL now are the teams that get the most out of guys on their entry levels, guys on league min deals, guys right. that they pick up off of waivers,
yep.
because you have that star core that makes a lot of money, and you fill in around the edges with all of the guys that get things done and the role players. And you, this is what happens. You let a guy like Broberg, who's better than the guys ahead of him, if you give him a shot, you let him go, because for him at this point in his career, he's like, I could either sign with the Oilers for probably close to league min and just sit there for the length of that contract or get dealt anyways in the hopes that maybe I could be involved in a Stanley Cup run, or I could just go get paid and be a regular NHLer over in St. Louis.
Right. And I mean, that's, I think, the big thing right now is that we're talking about two young players who have been essentially press boxed.
Yeah, Broberg did well in the playoffs, and so did Holloway.
But Broberg didn't start in the playoffs, so
it took
legitimately players for to underperform for him to get in, and then all of a sudden he came around. And
it took.
Hey, I'm here.
It took them way too long to realize that Darnell Nurse just isn't good anymore.
Well, I mean, it wasn't even Darnell Nurse. Like, they legitimately had Brett Kulak out there every single play, and you were going, what are they doing? They had, again, when they had CeCe on the power play, and that second power play unit was just an absolute catastrophe, who ended up playing on the second power play unit? It was Broberg.
Yes, and they're letting him go because they had to go and sign a bunch of really bad deals to get a bunch of veteran presence, because, you know, that's what you need to win a Stanley Cup these days, apparently.
But again, that's the question that comes up then, because if you're Stan Bowman, and again, this goes to Ken Holland as well, because Ken Holland's he's the same type of GM where he's basically just dismantled teams instead of putting them together, but why do they go and sign Connor Carrick? Why do they still keep Troy Stetcher? And why do they have Josh Brown on their blue line when you already have guys like Cody Ceci, guys like Brett Kulak, guys like... Again, it's not to say that any of those guys are worse or better or anything like that. It's that you have six guys who are all the same type of defensemen outside of Matthias Ekholm and outside of Evan Bouchard. You don't really have any room for anybody else. And Philip Broberg just goes, I'll take the easy route and go and play for St. Louis then.
Yeah.
For a good contract.
Yeah, a good contract and a path to being a regular NHLer.
Right.
Same thing for Holloway, who deserves to be an everyday NHLer.
So basically this comes down to, and again, we talked about how the show is going to be about business. This comes down to roster management and cap management. That's what it comes down to. And again, the Oilers have done...
Oh, those things that Stan Bowman's really good at?
Stan Bowman is the guy between 2015 and 2020 that traded the likes of Philip Deneau, that traded the likes of Tuvo Teravainen, traded the likes of Ryan Hartman, Gustav Forsling, and Robin Lehner.
Oh, I forgot they had Forsling.
All those guys have either won a Stanley Cup or have been significant parts of very good teams.
Yes. And then you throw into onto that list Artemi Panarin,
right,
who was traded for Brandon Saad, who was a cap casualty before that because he had a really good playoff run when they won that cup in 2015, and he was traded away to Columbus, which was, you know, a good decision for him because that's where he's from.
Right, yeah.
But after the team got absolutely demolished in the playoffs, what did Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane want? They wanted to get the band back together the last time they were successful, so they brought in a bunch of guys who did not serve that team very well. And, you know, you lost Brian Bickell, who, you know, you lost Christopher Stieg multiple times.
Andrew Ladd was lost there. Johnny Oduya went there multiple times.
Dustin Byfuglien was a cap casualty that they had to deal with. Like, you're losing so much talent, and they got lucky that Corey Crawford was waiting there and they could bring him in so they could fill the hole after, you know, they essentially lost the goaltenders that got them that first Stanley Cup, and they had some sort of stability. They were lucky that they were able to keep Marion Hossa around for the length of time he was there. They were lucky that they had a top pairing of Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook, who could play 30, 40 minutes a night.
Right, but those guys broke down pretty quickly once the minutes caught up to them, though, yeah. And that's the thing.
And they had Nick Chalmerson, right? Like, basically, like, the 2015...
But Chalmerson got traded, and then Yokoharu got traded. Like, yep. All the guys they brought in as defensive specialists, the guys who they relied on to be the shutdown guy...
Marcus Kruger as well, right, was dealt away.
Michael Frolik was dealt away. Like, this is what I mean. Like Stan Bowman went through so many players during that 2015 to 2020 era that you could legitimately make up a very good team with all the players he traded away.
Yes, exactly. And he was lucky in the fact that he had a core of six or seven guys that could keep going. But that's not what Edmonton has. But they have two.
Well, technically they have three if you want to count Bouchard, because he looks like he could be pretty good. But again, they don't have the same goaltending. I don't think Stuart Skinner is the same goaltender as Corey Crawford or
definitely
will ever
not
be. They don't have the prospects that they did at one point. Edmonton is cupboards are bare down in Bakersfield.
Yeah,
like there is nobody down there for them to go.
At the very least, the Blackhawks, when they weren't trading away their first overall pick to try and win another Stanley Cup and bring in like an Antoine Vermette or Brad Richards, they had scouting staff that was able to bring in talent,
right,
and acquire free agent talent like an Artemi Panarin, who could serve that team in the interim. What the Edmonton Oilers have is a bunch of ex-Edmonton Oilers who are calling the shots there, and they're not backfilling with the they don't have a number one defenseman like a Duncan Keith. They don't have a number two defenseman like Brent Seabrook. They don't have a number three defenseman like a Nick Jalmerson. They don't have their Taves and Kane equivalents that they can split up, but they don't have they kind of have a Marion Hossa equivalent in Zach Hyman. But like, you don't have the key pieces there to be that successful, because all of the cup winning runs for Chicago was buoyed by Taves, Kane, Crawford, Keith, Seabrook.
Right, and it was the pieces that they added around them, and I get that. We're talking about now, again, and this is something that Chicago didn't have to deal with, and yep. This is where Stan Bowman is going to struggle, I think, in terms of making the decisions that he has to make over the next week. They're $7 million over the cap right mm-hmm. now. They have $6 million, or $6.5 million they have to deal with in terms of these two contracts.
Yep.
And they have a piece in Evander Kane, who looks like he's going on long-term, who's only worth $5 million. You haven't found any cap relief yet. Mm-hmm. Because if you're going to try and keep these two young players, these two players that you drafted in the first round picks,
suddenly you need to find $3 million in
right.
cap relief. Not
you need to find like $12 million in cap relief. So the only way you're going to get out of this is by probably trading other players, mm-hmm. which means that because you don't have as good a team as you did in Chicago, you're probably trading from a point of weakness, not a point of strength.
Exactly. And you've got a whole bunch of middling deals. Because, the other thing is Chicago had a lot of, heavy deals up front.
Yeah.
Up top. And a bunch of, league... they were the prototype for what teams are now, right? Where you've got the guys that are your star players, your core, that are signed, a good goaltender, good top pair, good first line, that are all signed to reasonable deals that are allocated well to what they bring, and then you're filling it in with a lot of league min, entry level contracts, some smaller signings, a bunch of waiver pickups. Not doing what Edmonton's doing, where you're filling it with a $2 million contract here, a $3 million contract here, a $1.5 million contract here.
But again, I'll base it on what we were just talking about prior to the show. It's the same thing that Winnipeg ran into this year when they were going, how do we keep Monahan? How do we keep Toffoli? How do we keep mm-hmm. when we have $100,000 in cap space? And the answer is you can't.
You don't, because you've made your bed.
And so we were both saying, lucky that nobody offer sheeted Cole Perfetti, because
that
he was out
so
there.
Easy.
He was out there, and he certainly could have been.
Yeah.
And he certainly is looking for an opportunity to show off his talents. Lucky that nobody offer sheeted Cole Perfetti, because that would have been he would have been gone. Mm-hmm. And the Jets still have not figured out how they're going to proceed moving forward when it comes to who is filling the holes on those lines, that were abandoned by Monahan and Toffoli because they took deals elsewhere.
Exactly.
That Perfetti and Lambert are gonna basically compete for the spots.
Which, good, because that's what you need them for.
Okay, but then you still have a pile of guys that are backfilling, that are expensive, mm-hmm. not expensive, but that are holding down million-dollar contracts that you're burning for no reason at that point.
Yeah.
Like, I like, don't get me wrong, I have nothing against anybody like Gustafsson, nothing against Kupari, nothing mm-hmm. against those guys. You're fourth liners. You should, you're league minimum guys.
You're making what you're worth.
But at the time when we're looking at trying to fill roster spots with good young players, they shouldn't be eating up cap space that I need to sign other guys with.
Oh, you mean you shouldn't be signing a guy who does not want to be here, has requested a trade, and brings absolutely nothing to the team instead of letting a Ville Heinola maybe make the jump and be a permanent NHLer, which he should have been when he was 18 years old.
I'll say nothing more about Logan Stanley than he's probably going to die here.
Like,
there'll be a statue outside the MTS
but
Center,
like,
or the Canada Life Center.
The Oilers and the Jets, and to a and this is what
but this is the way that 90% of the teams are constructed in the NHL.
This is the way that, but no, this the mentality that the Oilers and the Jets are under are the mentality that every Canadian team is under for no good reason. Where it's like, oh, we're loyal to our guys. We're good to our guys.
I mean, Pittsburgh's in the same problem now.
Yeah.
Carolina's in the same problem. Rangers are in the same problem. Like, all of these guys that have gone out and spent big money on big players. Great, good for you. That's fantastic. Here's the problem, though. You have no money for anybody else, and the young guys who look like they're going to be something are now going to the teams that are backfilling the again, and I don't hate to say this, but Utah could have a very good team a couple of years.
Yeah.
Because all they do is pick up all the unwanted or the unsigned players and go, we'll give you a chance to play. We don't care if we come last.
That is how Vegas went from zero to the Stanley Cup final in their first year. They took all of the cast-offs that teams could not afford or did not see a future with. Like, the fact that they were gifted Jonathan Marchessault as a sweetener for taking Riley Smith's contract is insane to me. The package that they got from Minnesota is insane to me.
But this is the thing, though, is that it's not about not recognizing talent. It's simply about poor roster management.
Yes.
Like, they legitimately capitalize on everybody else's stupidity.
Exactly.
And I hate to say it that way, but that's exactly what they did. If this was a business and you had this brand new invention that you legitimately wanted to promote, but you had no money to promote it, and somebody else came along and said, well, I'll buy that for $1 million.
Yeah.
Guess what? That's business.
Mm-hmm.
That happens all the time.
And, you know, you think about the team, and again, I'm going to go back to Vegas. They are making the hard calls every single year.
Right.
If Bill Foley owned the Toronto Maple Leafs, Mitch Marner would have been traded 3 years ago.
Wow.
John Tavares would have been traded almost immediately from the contract that he signed. They would have made all of these moves. Like, Logan Stanley would have never touched the ice for the Winnipeg Jets if Bill Foley owned the Winnipeg Jets.
But I mean, we can sit here and we can conjecture all they want. The problem is that Edmonton has a week to deal with this now.
Yes.
And this is the part that I want to see, because if I'm sitting in that chair, if I'm Stan Bowman mm-hmm. right now, I have three thoughts on my head. What do I do with Draisaitl? Because I have to sign him.
Yes.
And Draisaitl's come back, and I'll give him credit. He's been at least, you know, reasonable. He said, I'll take less in order for us to keep more.
Yeah.
But I don't think I think there's a limit on what he's going to go down to, obviously. And 8.5 is probably not going to be good enough because that's what he got last time.
No. He's getting a pay raise, and it's going to hurt.
Right. So we're talking double digits probably at the very minimum.
Yeah.
Which means that him and Connor McDavid are making a large chunk of that of that salary cap.
And you're going into the exact same problem when McDavid's contract's up.
Right, and that's in 2026. So you're not far off from having that problem. So here again,
it's Taves and Kane all over again.
I sit here and I look at this and I go, it's exactly the same problem. Taves and Kane, and I've got all these young players and I don't know how to keep them signed. What do I do? And the answer is going to be for Stan Bowman, let him walk.
Yep.
I need the draft pick so I can start trading away some of these other players to lower my salary cap because I'm already over the cap.
The answer was not sign Jeff Skinner, sign Adam Henrique.
Right.
Keep Corey Perry around. Keep Cody Ceci around.
But now you have to take those picks and package them with those, yep, those contracts in order to move them.
Exactly.
And this is the problem now, because now you don't have the player, you don't have the pick, and you don't, and you're already down another, yep, player.
Yeah, and for St. Louis, like, it's a win-win. Like, this is a team that is probably going to miss the playoffs this year, that is in this weird position where they need to kind of retool and
they've got five defensemen that are 33 years, yeah, or older.
They need a Broberg in, right, there to start rebuilding that core. So it's a win-win for them. It's either they get the two players that they want, or at least one of them.
Right.
And the other option is they just sewer the Edmonton Oilers.
The Edmonton Oilers are going to have to come back and trade a bunch of stuff away, and we'll be first in line for that. Thanks.
Exactly. So the rumor was that
because Edmonton came sniffing around at the trade deadline about Pavel Buchnevich,
yep,
and then St. Louis signed him in the offseason to a longer term deal. Apparently the ask was for Broberg and for Holloway. They already knew that these two were on their radar.
Yeah.
You would think that Edmonton would have made the adjustments long before it got to free agency, that would have happened. Mm-hmm. And then what did St. Louis do? And this is the part that I love about St. Louis doing this.
Yeah.
Because they waited till after arbitration season ended, the Oilers can't go out and trade for an arbitration eligible player, mm-hmm, which resets the clock for them. So they're stuck either paying the full amount for these players now, yep, or they have to give them up.
That's there's only amazing two piece of gamesmanship, right, by St. Louis.
And this is the kind of offer sheeting that should be done, mm-hmm, every year now.
Yes.
I want to see this destroy. Not that I want to see teams destroyed, but I want to see people who don't know how to manage their cap get destroyed in the media.
Yeah. And I want to just see the chaos unfold. Like, we talked about it before, the Sebastian Aho, Jesperi Kotkaniemi, right, drama, right?
Right?
Where, you know, the room, like, Tom Dundon knew the rumors when he acquired and, like, was not willing to pay Rod Brind'Amour and his coaching staff what they wanted and all this other stuff and all the talk about how he's cheap, he doesn't want to spend money, blah, blah, blah. So Montreal goes out. And they deliberately sign Sebastian Aho to... Well, they signed him to a deal that was worth it, because it's Sebastian Aho. But they signed him to a deal to basically stick it to not a divisional rival, but a conference rival, and say, yeah, hey, we're trying to push your buttons here. It's either you spend money that we know you don't want to spend to keep this player that you want, or we get the player that we want. And obviously, Carolina matched it, because why wouldn't you for Sebastian Aho?
Right, yeah.
But then, with an ego bruised, Tom Dundon went out and got Don Waddell to offer sheet Jesperi Kotkaniemi to a deal that Montreal never would have signed and never would have matched, and it's been a boat anchor for Carolina ever since.
But, I mean, I look at that and I just go, again, poor cap management, poor, yes, roster management, and Tom Dundon got suckered into that.
Yeah, because his ego was bruised.
Right.
I am so excited to see what happens with the Edmonton Oilers after this happens. Are they going to go out and do something stupid?
Well, yeah, they have to, because they have to get under the cap before the season starts.
No, but, like, something that, like them having to make some bad deals to clear space, like, that, okay, that makes sense. Like, you have, that's something they have to do.
Yeah, but,
I want
but,
them
what,
to make a really
okay,
dumb decision.
Right, but what can you trade off that roster? And again, we're going long, way over yeah, over our heads here. But, like, Jack Campbell's probably the easiest contract that you can identify to move. Who wants Jack Campbell?
Nobody.
Okay, so Cody Ceci's the next one.
Arizona's not there to offload the contract,
right,
to anymore.
Who wants Cody Ceci? The answer is nobody. Like, he's been through a bunch of different teams already.
Like, are you hoping that Columbus is going to come fill the Arizona role and just take on your bad contract?
But that's the thing, though. Don Waddell's already been burnt a couple of times in this. You don't really want to be that, yeah, guy again, right? Like, unless a Nugent Hopkins goes on the trading block, nobody's going to line up for the Oilers garbage.
Yeah. Like, it's going to be a really hard, deal to make.
Well, we'll see what happens, because, I mean, I love the fact that St. Louis caused all this chaos this week, and I really hope that more people are learning from this and going, we could probably do this next year, or we, yeah, could do this in a couple of years, like, in terms of what we have.
We're coming out of an era where offer sheets should have been used, like, thrown around like they meant nothing, because the cap was flat. Teams were right up against it. They were making bad decisions left, right, and center. There should have been so many offer sheets the last few years. I really hope that it gets flexed more often.
Do you remember when who was it? Hartford offer sheeted Sergei Fedorov. Well, I guess it was Carolina. But it was after Carolina moved. No? February 22nd, 1998, Carolina was in their first season after relocating from Hartford. They offered Fedorov a six-year, $38 million offer. Nice. That Detroit matched.
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
Well, again, Ken Holland was like, okay, like that, like, we got to in terms of going. But again, like, if those guys are available, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Again, the same thing with the Aho. If he's available, why aren't you doing this?
Exactly.
So I want to see more of this. I think it's a good again, I understand people are going to, oh, you can't do this. It's not proper way of doing business. You know what? That's out. It's out. The NHL has changed. It's a business only now. It is not a sport. Let's get over that.
Yes.
It's a business, and it always will be a business first.
Yep.
End of the day. Speaking of business, the Oilers were in the news again this week.
Oh boy.
Because they're apparently coming after business in a big way, mainly everybody in Alberta's business, in that I don't understand. I understand you have a lousy premier out there. I mean, I'll say it out loud. I understand that she's
obsessed with making billionaires more money and vanity projects.
I understand that she's a bit of an idiot, and I'll say that out loud as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I might get in trouble for that, but I don't really care. But Danielle Smith, the premier of Alberta, has pledged $330 million of Alberta taxpayer money to Calgary.
That's a third of $1 billion.
Yeah, to the city of Calgary in order to help build the new arena that's finally been started. Forget the fact that we saw Smith and her government embroiled in an ethics controversy after her government accepted Oilers playoff tickets from Invest Alberta, a corporation owned by the province, after that company basically received the tickets from a company responsible for importing $70 million worth of Turkish children's pain relievers in 2023. But apparently since June, the government's been working with an Oilers group and a City of Edmonton group on somehow giving them $330 million or around that amount as well. I can't go over this enough and say that Alberta's education system, Alberta's healthcare system, Alberta's infrastructure is failing miserably.
Yep.
I wish that I could emphasize that to a lot of people, and I know that a lot of citizens that are living there are realizing this now. But let's just let this sink in. The Independent Contractors and Business Association in Alberta estimated the province's municipal infrastructure deficit now sits at $30 billion. Billion.
Yeah.
With a B. Billion. Mm-hmm. And we haven't even talked about the costs to rebuild Jasper yet.
Nope. And the cost to, I'm assuming the province is going to foot the bill for whatever, or has foot the bill, or has promised to foot the bill for at least part of what happened in Calgary with the water main break and all of that.
So, again, Danielle Smith invited the Oilers Entertainment Group and the City of Edmonton to submit a proposal for the equivalent of what her government provided the billionaire owners of the Calgary Flames. Invited them to submit a proposal. This was after, in 2012, as the leader of the Wild Rose Party out there, she committed saying that she would not provide funding to a new arena in Edmonton.
You know, this, like, they're acting like whiny children who are mad because their sibling got a toy and they didn't.
Again, shortfalls in medicine, shortfalls in education, shortfalls in infrastructure.
You had a $4.3 billion deficit. Where'd it go?
And you're giving over $500 million to two billionaires.
Yes.
Giving it to them. Not making them earn it, not making them do anything for it, giving it to them.
What about that light rail project that was going to just change life in Alberta for the better?
Hold on. So here, let's keep this going. Let's keep the slaps to the head going here, because legitimately Forbes magazine, which is a fairly famous business magazine, which does a lot of work in terms of examining business deals, estimated that the Oilers' operating income in 22-23 was $122 million.
Mm-hmm.
Operating income. That's the money they made.
Yep. That's revenue.
It was second to only the Maple Leafs in the NHL.
Yep. That's revenue.
The Flames.
That's over top of what they needed to cover their CapEx and OpEx.
The Flames' operating income was $37 million, and that put them in the middle of the pack. And if you're staying on the ball here, that's only $3 million less than what the Flames' owners have pledged to for the new arena.
Mm-hmm. But their revenue for one season is paying off what they owe on their own arena.
This is madness.
So effectively, they spent nothing.
And again, you can talk about in 25 years, the city of Calgary will own the arena, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's a good investment.
You're going to be building another arena before then.
Hold on. So you know what the next oldest arena is after the Saddle Dome in the NHL? Take a shot. I guarantee you won't get it.
MSG doesn't count, right?
No, because they do million-dollar renovations on that, like, every year.
Second oldest. Scotiabank Arena?
No, it is actually the Honda Center in Anaheim.
Oh.
1993 when it was built. Do you know what the Samuelis did in 2022? The owners of the Ducks? You know what they did?
What?
They went to the city of Anaheim and said, you know what? We heard the Olympics are coming here. How about we invest $4 billion of our own money into upgrading all of the area around the rink?
Yep.
And you know what the city of Anaheim did? $4 billion of your money? Done. Do it.
Yep. Go ahead.
Didn't come and ask for public money. Said, we're prepared to do this. And yet the city of Calgary and the city and the province of Alberta is paying $1.2 billion to yep. to put in a new arena in Calgary. Mm-hmm.
So
now adding $330 million to it because they're giving Edmonton a chance to match that amount.
His name has come up very recently for very important reasons. But Tim Walz, now I guess former governor of Minnesota.
Yeah, yeah.
When he was in office in Minnesota, the state ran a budget surplus, just like the province of Alberta. What did Tim Walz and his government do? They spent almost all of it on infrastructure projects because those are often, in a lot of cases, one-time payments to get something done, to build something, to repair something. It's a lot of money that, like, a lot of these projects slide and are behind on, like, infrastructure repairs or infrastructure projects. They're big and expensive, but for the most part, you build it and you're done.
Then it's just upkeep. Yeah.
Throwing money at a private business is not the same thing.
Again, this is a province that is in significant disrepair and in
disorder. You can't pay teachers.
Right. You can't pay doctors. You can't pay for sidewalks. You can't pay for sewers. And we're giving $330 million to a billionaire.
And we don't even know what it's for. You're asking them, what do you want this money for?
Right. Give us a proposal and we'll give you the money, basically.
I feel like I'm going crazy. I feel like I'm going crazy. Like, every single other premier in Canada just needs to point at Alberta and say, we won't do that.
Whatever they're doing, we're doing the opposite.
Exactly. Hey, next time, who's doing an election next? Is it BC? Is it Saskatchewan? Well, Saskatchewan party's going to win the next election in Saskatchewan. Anyways.
Ontario's pretty close, aren't they?
Yeah. They're probably pretty close, actually. Whether it's the Liberals or NDP, just point to what... you can point to Doug Ford's track record, but you can point to what Danielle Smith is doing and say, we won't do what she's doing. Vote for us.
Remember, this is a woman that was a radio host for a long time. We could be the premier of Alberta right now.
We are just as qualified as Danielle Smith.
I know nothing about budgets. I have exactly the same qualifications.
Like, I know where the money is going. It's going to billionaire pockets. But, like, you have a $4.3 billion budget surplus.
You claim to have that, and nobody's actually been able to verify that.
Yeah. After...
Because, I mean, how is nothing getting funded if you have that much money sitting around?
It's like how the Pallister and then Stephenson government kept telling us, oh, we're going to balance the budget, we're going to balance the budget, we're going to balance the budget, and the NDP take over and they're like, hey, the budget deficit is actually bigger than they told us it was.
In fact, it's still getting worse.
Yeah, because now we got to catch up.
I don't know. Anyway, so Danielle Smith is basically, if you're a billionaire and you live in Alberta, make friends with Danielle Smith. She'll give you money.
Yeah.
Free of charge. Don't even have to do anything for it.
Yeah, for nothing. You just tell her what you want the money for.
Just show up.
Just complain loud enough, and she will give you money.
If somebody else gets something, you demand more.
And, you know, citizens of Alberta, when you can't find a doctor, don't blame the federal government, because they have nothing to do with it. Blame the woman that just gave gave $600 million to two billionaires.
13 school divisions in Alberta this year are going to experience funding cuts. 13 school divisions, including one in Medicine Hat that will lose over $1 million. But hey, $330 million to the Edmonton Oilers. I hope you love going to watch the Oilers play.
But hey, we don't have a sales tax.
Let's jump to maybe a little more of a fun story. Actually, you know, one more NHL story, just because I want to get this one out of the way, and I hate the fact that we have to talk about this. But I brought up Anaheim, and we'll bring up Anaheim again, because it seems like the Department of Nepotism, I mean player safety, is at work again. George Parros, the guy who's in charge of the Department of Player Safety, announced this week that Ryan Getzlaff will be joining the Department of Player Safety for who knows what reason other than why.
To be George Parros' replacement when he becomes director of hockey operations at some NHL team.
But do we just, like, the Department of Player Safety, is it based in the Honda Center? Because Brian Burke was the GM of the Anaheim Ducks. He was the director of player. He was in charge of player safety.
Yep.
Chris Pronger played for the Ducks. He was in charge of player safety for a while. George Parros played for the Ducks. He's now the director of player safety. And now we have Ryan Getzlaff in the Department of Player Safety.
Because didn't it go Burke, Pronger, Shanahan, Parros, now probably Getzlaff?
Yeah.
So the only person in there that had nothing to do with the Ducks is Brendan Shanahan.
No, and the Detroit Red Wings beat them a couple of times in the playoffs while Shanahan was a member of them. So there's clearly some tie in there somewhere.
Yep. I cannot wait. Like, what is there? Is there a director of hockey operations job open in the NHL right now? Because then we can just tell you where he's going to go.
But why can't we get somebody in there who actually watches the games and goes, you know what? We can make this better for all the players. Like, I don't understand why are players in charge of the Department of Player Safety? They are the worst people to look after their own safety.
It's a thing called bias.
Yeah, but they try and kill each other every game.
Yeah, that's like exactly.
That's like putting a gladiator in charge of gladiator wars. Everything's allowed. Go crazy.
It's like you take a criminal and you say, hey, you're the chief of police now.
Well, yeah. To me, this doesn't make any sense, but whatever. I mean, granted, he's got 1,000 points. He's going to be a Hall of Famer at some point. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, but that doesn't make him a good director of hockey Department of Player Safety.
I don't understand this. But like, anyway.
Didn't he just retire?
Yeah, he's 39. He's not very old at all. So he's probably going to do this job for the next 50 years as
well. What has he done in his life other than be a professional hockey player?
Nothing.
To get him ready for this job?
Nothing.
Nothing.
He played junior hockey.
So he's going to spend a year shadowing George Parros, and he's just going to take over.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. Speaking of 50-year-olds, I think I like this story.
Okay.
52-year-old Jaromir Jagr has already said that he'll be back to play for the Kladno Knights this season. It seems he's going to make good on his word. The former NHL star has been reportedly skating with Roman Cervenka, Martin Nečas, and David Pastrnak this summer, and he's already down 15 pounds from where he was last season. According to Jagr, he has every intention on playing every game for Kladno this season, and he's decided to train like if he were still in the NHL. Back on July 24th, he told iSport.cz, the Czech sort of sport website, quote, for the last 5 years, I haven't done anything in the summer and started getting myself ready in November or December. This time it's different. I still have almost 2 months of training ahead of me, so I'll see how I'll do. At the moment, I'm not thinking specifically about the first game of the season, but I want to play every game. I'm going to train full time. Unquote.
Because he was only playing home games before, right?
He was only playing home games, and he was only playing it when guys were injured. So last year, he only played 12 games.
Probably still put up like 40 points. But.
No, he only had like 6 points or something last year. But I mean, again, he only played 12 games and he was like 15 pounds overweight. So on his workouts, here's what he told the website. On his workouts and getting in shape, he said, quote, I don't want to lose muscle, but according to the measurements, I've lost at least 5 kilos of fat.
Oh, jeez.
Which is important to me. But I have also seen players who are fat and still score goals. Which I thought was a great quote.
That man is an enigma.
Of course, in good shape, you feel better and are less tired. It's about having the strength, unquote. This man is legitimately 52 and going into another season of hockey like it's his first.
That man is 52, and he's probably he's probably in better shape than I am in my 30s.
This guy could take me down at 20. Like, he's ridiculous.
This insanity.
So Jágr getting ready to play for Kladno again next year in the Extraliga. Sounds like he's going to be a big part of that team next year. Good for him. I guess if they almost got relegated this year. They basically avoided relegation by one game. And Jágr might be trying to...
He took that personally.
Yeah, Jágr might be trying to put that on his back and carry it for next season. So we'll see what happens there.
Watch Kladno win the championship.
His first game is against Dinamo Pardubice, where Roman Cervenka plays.
Oh, yeah.
So there you go. Little Winter Classic update for those who may not be paying attention, because I don't... From now on, I'm not calling it the Winter Classic. It's going to be the annual outdoor winter game.
I forget that it happens every year, because it's just like...
And I'll say this because the NHL doesn't know when to stop when it's beat this thing to death. And I'm honestly done with this game.
Yep.
So here's why. For those that legitimately are going to be tuning in on January 1st, you might see a replay of the game. That's because the game will happen on December 31st between the Chicago Blackhawks hosting the St. Louis Blues at Wrigley Field, which, if you're asking me, is completely stupid considering all the other stuff that happens on December 31st. I don't know. There's this little thing called New Year's Eve that people get ready for and go out to. But we're going to play a hockey game that day.
You know,
why aren't we playing this on January 1st like it was supposed to be meant to be played on?
That's my question. Like, because that's supposed to be the day. Like, the NBA owns Christmas Day.
Right.
They have the Christmas Day game with the special jerseys and whatever. It's the games are at like a specific time, so it gets maximum viewership.
Right.
That's the exact same rationale that the NHL should have with January 1st. Have marquee viewing, get these teams in front of, get the teams that you want to grow a fan base in front of fans. But you're going to have two abysmally bad teams.
You'd see Broberg and Holloway, though.
That's right. You'd see Connor Bedard and Connor Bedard.
But beyond that, though, here's the thing. And I'm kind of glad that the NHL may be loosening its reins a little bit, because we tried to get teams on here, and we know that was denied when they had the outdoor game here between Edmonton and Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. The Bisons apparently tried to get an outdoor game on that ice, and they were told hit the bricks.
Yeah.
What's happening down at Wrigley, though, is that the NCAA is getting a little bit more involved. January 3rd, we'll see Penn State and Notre Dame clash in a men's hockey game, while Ohio State and Michigan play in a men's hockey game in the evening. On January 4th, Ohio State and Wisconsin battle in a women's hockey game during the day.
Oh, that was so good.
And Wisconsin and Michigan State tangle in a men's game that night. So it should be good to see those four games,
all teams that are better than Chicago and St. Louis.
If you're tuning into the Winter Classic, you might want to wait till January 3rd, because those games, Penn State and Notre Dame, not so much, but Ohio State and Michigan will be fantastic in men's hockey. Wisconsin and Michigan State will be excellent in men's hockey. Ohio State and Wisconsin basically is the reigning NCAA champion against the absolute beast of the NCAA in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Oh. So those will be great games.
You're getting the NHL league in the world, and you're getting outdone by college hockey.
It happens. That's all I'll say. It happens.
Like, could you not pick better teams to do this with?
Well, no. Because
Chicago.
It's either Chicago or Pittsburgh almost every year.
Like, I don't care about the viewership numbers, NHL. Like, pick two good teams.
Chicago and Pittsburgh. If you can't get one of those two teams, like, we're not doing it.
Could you not just have the Florida Panthers and the Tampa Bay Lightning go at each other? Two teams that want to kill each other.
We did that in the stadium series, though. That's a stadium series game. Don't worry about that.
Who cares?
Because we do a dozen of these games a year now, because they're not special anymore. They're not important.
Do you not want to,
like, the Heritage Classic was here, and they only do them every 4 years here. It's an Olympiad now.
It's ridiculous. Do you not want to, like, build the rivalry between Vancouver and Seattle?
No.
It's right there.
No.
It's literally right there.
No. No.
Do you not want, you know...
No, got to run out the Battle of Alberta again. Battle of Alberta, let's go.
Do you not want to have, you don't want to reignite the Calgary the Colorado Detroit rivalry.
No,
don't want to bring that back.
No, that was bad for hockey. It was a lot of fighting. A lot of people got hurt.
You don't want the Dallas Stars to play the Minnesota North Stars and
we did that in Dallas.
Stars.
We did that in Dallas. Yeah,
I guess we got to trot out Chicago versus St. Louis again.
I don't understand, but whatever.
Oh, we'll do another. We'll do another Pittsburgh Washington in a few years. It'll be fine.
Pittsburgh Philly, Pittsburgh Boston, one of those teams. So, you know, we'll get all those guys in there again.
Columbus has had one outdoor game.
Some fun from overseas. I mean, we already talked about Yager a little bit, but we'll bring in some good ideas here, because again, this goes to the business side of things. Finland's top women's league, the Naistenliiga. You may not recognize that, but it's literally translated into the women's league in terms of their hockey league. We'll move forward this season with a new name, as the league will now be called the Aurora Liga. This decision follows the branding direction of the National League, which is the women's top-tier football league in Finland, who removed Naisten, women, from its name in 2020. At the time, Heidi Palaya said of the change, quote, "We start to think, what if we could create our own brand identity from our own perspective with our own messages?" She added, "If we talk about a men's league, it's okay to have a women's league, but it's not okay to talk about a league and a women's league," unquote. Aurora Liga director Henny Laaksonen said, quote, "Updating the name and brand is the result of much thought and hard work and an important symbolic act. It's high time to play hockey without prefixes," unquote. You may be wondering, well, I'll talk about the name in a second, but you may be wondering why it's coming now. Again, Finland has basically said, we're it's hockey. It's hockey and it's soccer.
Yeah.
Well, football, but hockey and football. We don't care if it's played by men or by women. It's hockey and football, period. Yeah.
We're not making a distinction.
I would like that to happen here. I would like to see that happen starting, again, at the university level. It's just Bison's hockey, period.
Yeah.
Not men's hockey, not women's hockey, just Bison's hockey.
Yep.
Done. Bison's soccer, Bison's football, Bison's whatever.
Yep. Like, oh, I mean, for soccer, it is Bison soccer because there's no men's team.
But at the same time, though, you shouldn't need the women's part in there, though. Yeah. It should just be soccer.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what I care about is, you know, you can call it whatever you want. Like, literally, you can call it whatever you want. The thing that matters is that at a structural level, that there is a league for an underserved community, i.e. women and non-binary people and, you know, whatever that league's guidances are for. It is a specific opportunity for them to get training, funding, all of the resources that if they had to compete with men who have all of the structural advantages already, they would just get, it would get forgotten about. It would just become another kind of minor league. But to have that opportunity, like the WNBA, the PWHL, the F1 Academy, you know, it is there for a specific kind of person to give them all of the structural advantages to grow that game in that community. Whatever you call it does not matter. That's why it's not the F1 Women's.
Right.
It's the F1 Academy.
Right.
It's just a segment of F1 that is for developing female talent.
So again, you just talked about the name, right? And again, this is where branding comes in. I think the branding on this is fantastic. You may be wondering why the league chose Aurora Liga as the name. Again, like, what does that even mean? Like, whatever. Part of it is due to Finland's Arctic geography. Again, Aurora Borealis is up there in terms of where they're located. There, they get to see the Northern Lights a lot.
Yep.
But also because the Aurora Borealis Cup is awarded to the Women's League champions in Finland every year.
That's awesome.
So they're naming the league after not only where they're located, but the cup that they play for. The Aurora, just so everybody's aware, the Aurora League's regular season kicks off the first week of September. There are going to be a few teams, though, that get a taste of Canadian hockey this weekend, though.
Okay.
And the reason for that is because the Regina Cougars are in Finland right now to play a three-game set against three of the Finnish women's teams. Again, not that I want to call them women's teams, but whatever. We have to verify that just to make sure, because there is a men's hockey team out there as well. But they will play their first preseason games this weekend as they flew over to Finland for the three-game set against the Finnish teams. They play Friday against Tampereen Ilves, which, again, might be a name that you recognize, as we talk a little bit more about that in a second. Sunday, Regina will play HIFK, and Tuesday has them wrap up this road trip with a game against HPK, and I actually had to include the name in this. Kikonezet. Kikonezet means puck women.
I love that.
The HPK puck women. HIFK and Helsinki are the two-time defending Aurora Borealis Cup winners, so things won't be easy there. HPK was fourth overall last year, so this won't be a walk in the park for the Cougars by any means. But it should be noted that Ilves is where Jenny Hirakoski, who has played a number of big games for Finland over the years, she played there along with one player that we're very aware of, Venla Hovi, who played there from 2003 to 2010. So Tampere, in terms of the Lynx that play there, the Ilves that play there, is where those players got their start. So that's kind of cool in terms of having a tie-in back to, to us here. Last story, Jason, I know this one, you actually brought this one story to my attention.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about this because this is a business one that legitimately
goes
off the rails quickly. Back in May, it was announced that a new professional hockey team in Uzbekistan called Burgut Tashkent. Now, Tashkent is the capital city of Uzbekistan.
Yep.
Burgut means eagles.
Yep.
Okay? So, basically, Tashkent Eagles would be joining the Kazakhstan-based Pro Hockey Ligazy. Ligazy's league in Czechoslovakia, in Kazakhstan, I guess. Reportedly, this team was funded by South Korean investors, and they plan to start playing 2024-25, so next season. A few weeks later, though, the club came out and announced that they had hired Kazakhstan's men's national team assistant coach, Alexander Vysotsky, and former Humo. So Humo Tashkent is the other team from Tashkent that plays in that league. Mm-hmm. Former Humo goaltending coach, Roman Krivomsov. Sorry, Krivomsov. Mm-hmm. There were a few player signings, a few import signings. Nobody really big, nobody of significant names. But they announced a few player signings, a few import signings. Things seemed to be progressing quite nicely for them to get ready for the next season. That's where things went off the rails.
Yep.
Because the Pro Hockey Legacy announced in June that the same 11 teams that participated in 2023-2024 would also be back in 2024-25. There was never any expansion plans.
Yep.
The membership to get into the league would cost 35.6 million Kazakhstani tenge, which is about $75,000 American.
Yep.
So they didn't pay any sort of expansion fee to get in there.
Nope.
So they're not part of the league. And then in late June, a couple weeks after the Pro Hockey Legacy said that they're not part of us, the Uzbek Ice Hockey Federation got into the fray when they announced that Burgut had posted fake news about being in communication with their organization and urged the team to delete all their Instagram posts. Shortly thereafter, Burgut had deleted their Instagram account and have gone silent since. There has been zero news about them after that, so I gotta ask, is this the world's greatest prank?
Like, it's so weird because they went out and, like, I think about the MLH story again, where it's like, you're just, like, selling air.
Right.
Right? But you're able to get, like, con a number of, like, reputable people, like a guy that's worked in the league before, a guy that is the assistant coach of the national team.
A bunch of players.
A bunch of players, including one of the apparently one of the best players in Uzbekistan.
Yeah.
And you're able to get them all to agree to sign for this team that doesn't exist with these fanciful South Korean, like, funders?
Investors, yeah.
Like, what? I want to know what happened here.
Well, again, it sounds like somebody was legitimately trying to come up with an idea, and, I mean...
Did they just hope that, like, the Kazakh League, like, wouldn't check?
But it's like when Buffalo drafted that guy that didn't exist, that Taro
Tsujimoto.
Tsujimoto. Like, they made him up in the middle of the draft and just said, "Oh, we're going to take this guy."
Yeah, because nobody could verify.
Right, and that's the thing, is that it's the same idea. Like, but this went actually into, like, it lasted for months before somebody caught on and said, "Wait a second here, this isn't happening.
This isn't real."
Yeah, what the heck?
Like, so, it's crazy to me that, like, we got all the way to August.
Well, it got to about the end of July.
Yeah.
Middle of July, I guess, before finally everything came down and then people were like, what the hell?
Yeah.
But the news didn't get to North America until, like, now.
Yeah. It was weeks after the schedule and, like, the announcement of, like, the teams that were going to play in the league. Yeah. After that announcement, weeks passed before people were like, hold on, that team's not part of it. What are they posting about?
Where are these guys coming from? So there's your business news for the week in the world of hockey, because, I mean, that's a lot of stories that had a lot of business stuff to them. Jason, anything you want to say before we get out of here as we get set to call it another week here?
Congratulations to Connor McDavid on his wedding. Seeing all the photos and everything from that, seems like it was a fun time.
You think Holloway and Broberg were there?
Maybe not.
In saying that, folks, we are out here for another week. Come back next week. We're going to have a special guest on next week as we get set for a big interview next week. We're excited to talk to this person. Keep your eyes on social media. We're going to have some teasers all week about this. But that, folks, we're out here for another week. Take it easy. We'll see you on Thursday next week here on The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
was offside, wasn't it? He'll be crying himself to sleep tonight on his huge pillow.
Dry those tears and get set for more great programming here on 101.5 CJUM FM in Winnipeg.
Good night, Dad.
Bye, Mr. McKenzie.
Fine, go. You've stayed your hour.